Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, April 7th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered in my over 46 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've used to great effect for over 16 years to remove the negative emotions in my life and to be able to convert any experience of a negative emotion into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted with. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. You can download it. It's a PDF file. Just click it and download it. Don't even have to get put on a mailing list. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. If you do that, as we hope people will, you can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process or asked clarifying questions about it or given testimonials about the powerfully positive impact they've had from applying those tools in their life. And then give us a call with your comments or your questions. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And we appreciate when people do that. If you call that number and press 1, it will let me know you want to ask a question. Today is the 97th day of the year, and we're working through the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. And today's lesson is very simply, I am spirit. The commentary says, today's idea identifies you with your one self, capital S self, your true self, the holy offspring of creation. And creation rests in you. Creation, the mind of which has been restored to sanity. You are the spirit lovingly endowed with all of creation's love and peace and joy. You are the spirit which completes itself and shares its function as creator. It is with you always as you are with it. You are inseparably bound to that which created you and all of its creations. Today we try to bring reality still closer to your mind. And Michael Rice would clarify that to say, in his work, he would use the word actuality closer to your mind. Each time you practice, awareness is brought a little nearer, at least. Sometimes 1,000 years or more are saved. The minutes which you give are multiplied over and over, for the miracle makes use of time, and yet the miracle is not ruled by time. Salvation is a miracle, the first and the last, the first that is the last, for it is only one. You are the spirit in whose mind abides the miracle in which all time stands still, the miracle in which a minute spent in using these ideas becomes a time that has no limit and that has no end. Give then these minutes willingly and count on the creation that promised to lay timelessness beside these minutes. Creation will offer all its strength to every little effort that you make. Give creation the minutes it needs today to help you understand with it that you are in the spirit. You are the spirit that abides in all of creation and that calls through its voice to every living thing and offers its insight to everyone who asks. Creation replaces error with the simple truth. The Holy Spirit will be glad to take 5 minutes of each hour from your hands and carry them around this aching world where pain and misery appear to rule. It will not overlook one open mind that will accept the healing gifts they bring, and it will carry them and lay them everywhere he knows they will be welcome. And they will increase in healing power each time someone accepts them as his thoughts and uses them to heal. So the 5 minutes that you give to the Holy Spirit will increase in healing power each time someone accepts them as their own thoughts and uses them to heal. Thus will each gift to creation be multiplied 1,000-fold and tens of thousands more. And when it is returned to you, it will surpass in might the little gift you gave, as much as does the radiance of the sun outshine the tiny gleam of a firefly. The steady brilliance of this light remains and leads you out of darkness. Begin these happy exercises with the words the Holy Spirit speaks to you, and let them echo around the world through the Holy Spirit. Spirit am I, a holy offspring of creation, free of all limits, safe and healed and whole, free to forgive and free to save the world. Expressed through you, the Holy Spirit will accept this gift that you received of him, increase its power, and give it back to you. Offer each practice period today gladly. And it will speak to you, reminding you that you are spirit, one with all of creation and all of your brothers and sisters and yourself. Listen for this assurance every time you speak the words, and let creation tell your mind that they are true. Use them against temptation and escape its sorry consequences if you yield to the belief that you are something else. Holy Spirit gives you peace today. Receive these words and offer them back to creation. Spirit am I, offspring of creation, free of all limits, safe and healed and whole, free to forgive and free to save the world. And Glennon Doyle's, it's not Glennon Doyle's book, Pam Grout's book, The Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 97, is titled, Take the Gift, Damn It. She quotes Glenda Green is saying, accepting the idea there were going to be no problems was a greater adjustment than one might think. Pam writes, the standard paradigm goes something like this. Life is hard. It requires a constant influx of dinero, and if I'm lucky, knock on wood, and nothing goes wrong, I might be able to enjoy my final years with a brief retirement. The Course in Miracles says it's all utter nonsense, and that my search for legal tender, for convenience, and even spiritual enlightenment is a big fat waste of time. Do you really think that you're here to create a brand? To make Doritos or buy inflatable swimming pools? Do you really think tracking your market share and your 401k and your days until the weekend is valuable, is a valuable pursuit? Lesson 97 encourages us to enjoy Spirit's gift, the gift that's already here, the gift that requires not one iota of effort from you or me. Picture the dude as Oprah. Picture creation as Oprah. You get a gift, and you get a gift, and you get a gift, and you get a gift. You get this gift even if you screw up, even if you never get off your couch, even if you're constantly devising evil plans to get back at your college adversary. It's life, baby, and it's here coursing through your veins, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. So forget your feeble fears, your efforts to amass fortunes and to collect things. Forget you even have a body. Just rest in the vibrancy of spirit that lives and moves and animates your oh-so-holy self. 5 minutes every hour, remind yourself, I am spirit. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today and Pam Grout's commentary on it. And we have 47 minutes left to talk. And boy, I would imagine there's some talking to be done. We had our support group last night, and there was plenty of discussion and emotion and reaction and contention. And we have tools to help ourselves deal with that. Not everybody's willing at all times to pick up those tools and apply them, but we do have tools that can help us dismantle our upset. And I am open for discussion about that. If you don't know what those tools are, please go to whyagain.com or .org, whyagain.org. And click on that red and white bullseye and get to that page and find out what that tool is and put it to use in your life. I had occasion to use the tools quite a bit in the past couple weeks because there's been a lot of emotion swirling around for a lot of people related to the holidays, related to coronavirus restrictions, related to interactions with family around the holidays, and my work, the more I do it, keeps revealing to me that there is a level of, I'd have to say, peace, for want of a better word, that goes with being willing to tune into my internal guidance system more and more. And even though it can be hidden at times, even though it can be disguised as a worksheet process or a targeted journaling session, the fact of the matter is all of this work is about helping anybody who's willing to do this work get better and better acquainted with their own internal guidance system. And that's the whole piece of, that's the whole thing in a nutshell, that It isn't, well, Dr. Tim, tell me, how do I do this or what should I do in this situation? It's, Dr. Tim, what's that tool I can use to get in touch with my own inner knowing so that I can ask what I should do in this situation and be told and feel it and know it and have confidence when I act from it? That's what this work is about. And if truth be told, there are a tiny, tiny percentage of a percent of people on the planet that are actually living their lives from their own internal guidance system. And so every little bit of help that we can be to you or anybody else in tapping into your own guidance system, we want to do that. That's the primary purpose of our being here. The tools are just the mean to the end. The fact of living from the I don't know mind is, as a beginning point, and then learning to ask for the internal guidance, that's what this work is about. And if that makes sense to you and you already know how to use these tools, congratulations. Please pass them along to others. If that's not quite making sense to you, give us a call, 563-999-3581, and we'll have a conversation about how you might use these tools to clear the way. Because your internal guidance system is already there, it's already functioning beautifully, and most of the time when we're not accessing it and living our lives from it, it's because either we've never been introduced to that as a possibility, we don't even know it's there, or we've got so much trauma and so much false conditioning from our family and our culture that sits in the way that we can't see, we don't have direct conscious awareness of or access to our internal knowing because of the garbage that's in the way. And what would the garbage be? Well, the garbage might be that I have a plan, I have a hope that life would be different than it is in one way or another. I want somebody to let their guard down and be a good friend to me, let me in at an intimate level in a friendship. And every time I approach that person is guarded and wants to keep it at a distant or a professional level. And I may not even be aware of how much that is resonating upset in me. I may not even be aware of the fact that I'm holding such a strong hope for connection at a deeper level with that person. And if I use the tools when I have that kind of a situation, I might actually uncover pain, fear, sadness, disappointment, sense of failure that I downloaded quite a bit earlier in my life when I wanted somebody for a long time ago to let me in, to connect with me at an intimate level. And if I don't have the awareness that everything that that I experience as a negative emotion or attention today is rooted inside myself, then I won't even go looking for it. I will just assume, oh, I'm feeling this way because this person won't join me in an intimate relationship, or this person won't connect with me as a true friend. And as long as I keep believing that that's what's causing my upset, I've created a prison for myself, locked it, and thrown away the key. That's just You know, I can count on that just like I can count on my heart beating in the next moment. This is just the way life is. If I'm having an upset, any kind of discomfort, tension, negative emotion, in that moment, it's being created inside my energy system. And one of the gifts of this work is that the worksheet process itself has me cancel everything I think I want, because the culture that I'm living in, for the most part, probably if you were raised on this continent, the family that you were raised in conditioned you to believe that the upset, the negative emotions you're experiencing are caused by events on the outside, and that things should be a certain way. The problem here is that my shoulds are nothing more than a prison for me. I love the line from City of Angels where the angel has come down to heaven and he's from heaven and he's there to guide a soul back up to heaven when the body dies. And the soul he's there to guide back to heaven is in the body of a person who is being operated on by this, you know, top-notch female surgeon who just has a perfect record. And so when the surgery's happening and the soul decides to leave the body, the surgeon is just devastated. And she keeps repeating, he shouldn't have died. He shouldn't have died. I did everything right. This wasn't supposed to happen. And the angel in the movie breaks all the rules and comes into physical form to talk to the surgeon and basically says to her, hey, look, there's a lot more going on here than you know about. And there's a deep spiritual wisdom in that statement, in that movie. My conscious, logical mind cannot even begin to comprehend the world I'm living in and the way things have unfolded throughout my life. And it is just a game people play when they decide to create a meaning or decide for themselves what this means or why that happened, etc. And the bottom line is, we don't know. I read something recently where somebody was talking about how brutal it can be for some people when they have a difficulty happen in their life, and a well-intentioned person comes along and says, well, you know, everything happens for a reason. And that can be just very, very intense and difficult because even the people who say, oh, I know why this happened, they're just making it up. And even if they can see a whole series of coincidences that led to some of the best things in their life today, they're just seeing a tiny fraction of everything that's going on. This is why the core of this work, from the Kabor's manuscript to some degree, but definitely from the Course in Miracles, where it says, open a curtain in your practicing and cancel everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away, and leave a clean and open space for life to unfold or for the Christ mind to come. So rather than telling people these days, you know, and I've done a lot of that in my life, you know, well, everything happens for a reason or whatever, little toss-off phrases. But these days, rather than say everything happens for a reason, I talk about, in the bottom line observations I give, I talk about how what happens to me and around me in my life is nowhere near as important as how I choose to interpret it and then choose to respond. So rather than telling people these days, well, it's all going to be okay, it all happens for a reason, I instead talk about, okay, this has happened, this is very difficult for you to deal with, this is not what you wanted, how can we help you make the best of this? How can we help you choose an interpretation and a response that will, at a minimum, avoid adding insult to injury or pain or suffering to pain? So the I don't know mind that Byron Katie talks about is a really good starting place for me. I don't know. Why did that happen? I have no idea. What does it mean? I don't know. Routinely on this show, it might happen yesterday or the day before, somebody called and they asked a question. I don't know. Where did this all begin? Why did we get so off track? I don't know. And yet, I have learned that how I choose to interpret my experience of that event and how I choose to respond to it is critically important to its impact on me. So that's what we're offering. We're offering a situation that helps us as individuals, a set of tools that help us as individuals tap into anything that's happening with us that leaves us feeling an emotion we don't like, an upset that we'd rather not have, and find a way to interpret and respond to that situation that at a minimum avoids adding suffering to pain, and at best helps us have a direct experience of the miracle of life that we've been given access to. I just flashed on a whole series of talks that Guy Finley would give where he would talk about sailors in boats. And basically the essence of the story, time and again, is that when the storm comes up, the sailor falls asleep. And the suffering is happening because the sailor is asleep. And when the sailor and the hero in the story, when the sailor wakes up, the storm disappears, or the impact of the storm is mitigated. And then the person watching this says, well, how did this happen? What's the miracle? And basically the answer is, I just woke up. I just chose to see the situation differently. I refused to be driven by the energies that got stirred up in me. You know, Guy Finley is always using the storm, the external storm of the sea, as a metaphor for the storm inside us. And he tells a story about an old prospector and his donkey or his mule walking through a gulch, and there's a park ranger up at the high part of the ridge, and he gets very upset because he sees a storm coming on the other side of the gulch, and he says, that prospector should know better because, you know, this is going to be a flash flood, and he's going to get washed away. And as the park ranger watches, this wall of water comes rushing at the prospector, who's just plodding along with his head down, and all of the dust and dirt's flying off the mule as they step because they've been out there for weeks. And right before the wall of water hits them, the prospector looks up, and says something the park ranger can't hear. And as he does, it's just like the miracle of the Red Sea. The water parts and rushes around them, leaving the prospector and his donkey completely unscathed. And this flash flood gushes down the ravine, the gully, the gulch. And when it passes, the park ranger gets down there as fast as he can, catches up to the prospector and says, "What the heck just happened here? That was a miracle. What did you say?" And the prospector says, "Oh, nothing. I just looked up and saw this, you know, torrent coming at me, and I just said, please go on without me." And the park ranger was dumbfounded. He said, "What do you mean, please go on without me?" And he said, "Well, I just decided not to get all swept up in this nonsense." And the park ranger looked around in awe and realized that what had happened when this flash flood came through was it washed all of this dirt away. There were gems, diamonds, gold chunks all around the prospector and his donkey that had been hidden by the dust and dirt until the storm came through. The message in that story is that if I refuse to get swept away by my negative emotional states, if I refuse to blame them on other people, if I step into the use of the tools, gems, gifts, revelations, transformations are there for my experience. And every time I've, you know, had a significant situation where there's upset and I've applied the tools, that's essentially the experience I've had, that I'm amazed at what was sitting inside me, what I was holding on to as conclusions and beliefs and goals that I wasn't even aware of, that was generating all of this upset. And once I become aware of it significantly, to its depth, it loses its power over me. And it's amazingly simple. It's far more simple than my conscious logical mind wants to admit, because my conscious logical mind always wants to figure it out and try and understand it and make sense of it. And it won't. It's like the message from the City of Angels movie. There's too much more going on here that I don't even know about. So I can make up a story to help make sense of my life or how this happened or why this happened, but it's just a story I make up, like a bedtime story I make up to a kid to help the kid feel better about a rough day. But it doesn't mean that's what's really happening. I don't need to understand all of this. As a matter of fact, my conscious logical mind is not capable of understanding all of this. I mean, pick one thing in your life. This is why the Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery both have an exercise where they have us pick something up, hold it in your hand, and just take 5 or 10 minutes several times a day in doing this. Pick up the mug that's sitting there with water beside you and just look at it and understand. Let yourself realize you don't know where this came from. You don't know who was the first person that had an idea for a cup or a container with a handle, or the ceramics, or the paint, or the glaze. You don't know how any of that began. And yet, you live your life using it with this phony belief that you understand that and that it makes sense. At a surface level, there's a little story there that makes sense for you, but you don't know where anything, what anything truly is, where it's from, or what it's for, or what it needs. And then you can extend that to any person in your life. In the Way of Mastery exercise, it says, over and over again, it says, I don't know what my brother or sister needs in any given situation. I make guesses. If I'm a really sensitive person, I try harder at that than some other people. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know what brought this person to this situation. I don't know what baggage they carry. I don't know what gifts they have. So if I step back into the I don't know mind and I release that conditioned response that says figure it out, crunch it all down into a few bits or words or statements that you can make sense of, and just allow the day to unfold and ask, you know, how you can be a blessing in this situation, or ask to be shown, what is this for? What's mine to do here? How can I help? What does my brother or sister need? If I live in that questioning space without insisting on an answer, I'll have an entirely different experience of life. And that's what we're here to try and help ourselves and others get ushered into, an experience of life that is beyond words and that can't be crunched down into what Michael Rice would call something the 9-bit mind can comprehend. And if I just keep coming back to the simple observation that if I'm having a negative emotion or a negative thought, I can instantly know 3 things. This is a lie, or it's based in a falsehood. This is not about what's going on in this moment. This is about something from the past that's getting resonated, or a tape that's playing in my mind from the past. And if I take an action based on that, I'm just going to make my situation worse. I'm not going to improve. I can't improve my life situation by pouring negative emotional energy into what's happening in the moment. Can't happen. So if I begin there and then start applying the tools, I start removing the traumas and the energies and the false beliefs that are blocking me from having that direct experience of my life as this, the flow of creative energy expressing in form. That goes beyond words in a heartbeat. I had some hopes and desires for something in a relationship, basically in a relationship with my father. It was playing out in a relationship with an adult in my life, but it was for my father to have connected with me in a different way. And he just wasn't able to do that. And I can see that now as a psychologist. I can see that, and I can understand it intellectually in various ways. And yet, it still sat in me as a sadness or a sense of loss until I started doing some work around it and figuring out what my goal was and canceling that goal and asking to be shown and starting to see that what I wanted, what I thought I wanted as a child, was something that my father was not able to give in the way that I wanted it. And yet, he was giving a lot of the very thing I was hoping for in ways that were not exactly the way I was looking for it. And when I started to tap into that and the deep sadness that went with that realization that he just wasn't capable of giving me what I wanted at the time in the way I wanted it, and then I looked at and I felt, and with each worksheet I did where I canceled the goal and got in touch with that younger part of myself that was so upset, I began to understand the deeper pain. I feel the deeper pain. And then as I released it, I got to see other things. The other day I was doing that and I came into this realization that even though it never matched what I had wanted in terms of what my mind could describe, that my father would meet me at this explicit level to discuss this intimate connection about grief and loss and love, and he was just not capable of doing it. And yet, the more worksheets I did, to dismantle the sadness around that, the more my mind showed me how many different ways we were connected and that he did reach out to me when he could, in the ways he could. And as I kept cycling back through that and canceling the goals in the worksheet, I realized that, just like that line from the City of Angels movie, there's a lot more going on, always was a lot more going on in my dad's life and my life than I could ever realize. And it, at levels I could never have imagined, it's all been okay. Not what I would have wanted, not what my culture or my family might have conditioned me to believe should happen or that I needed to have happen, and yet it's been beyond words good. It's been beyond words intense at times, and it's been beyond words expansive, enriching, joyful. And so rather than make up a story about how it all happened for a reason, I'm contenting myself these days with choosing interpretations and responses that make it better for me to enjoy the life I have, that refuse to add suffering to the discomfort that's an inherent part of the life that I have. So, 563-999-3581. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Press 1. We have 17 minutes left before the second hour of the show, and I feel like I've talked enough. So what's your comment? What's your question? What's your hope for the future? What's your understanding of what I've already expressed? Or a specific question about anything I've already talked about? 563-999-3581 and press 1. I just realized as I said that the sense of urgency that I've had at different times to get things to change in my life today because of some of those goals that I have held over time from my father. The goals that I've held over time from my father that never got met have been a part of my mind energy creating a sense of urgency, this feeling of a pressure that I have to get things to change. And, you know, things in my life today to change, or things in my relationships with other people today to change. And the more I do that work, the more I wake up and realize that urgency to get things to change just isn't there. It's like the difference between a thought about a chocolate ice cream cone, just a passing thought about one, and a craving for one. I used to have this craving for things to be different in some of my present-day relationships with other adults in my life. And the more I did the work and kept realizing that it would go back to wanting something from my father he couldn't give me and looking at that and doing those worksheets, the more it deflated or diffused the sense of urgency for change in present-day relationships with others. I suppose it probably goes in line with the idea that when you're sitting in the realization that you're whole and complete the way you are and that everything as it's unfolding is okay, even if you can't figure out how, then when you look out at the world, it doesn't create as much of a sense of urgency for things to change. There's an ease of recognizing that even though I can't put words on it, it's all okay. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. You are on a subject that I've thought about so much, and it dovetails for me with what you read from Glennon Doyle yesterday and something Michael Rice said ages ago about how one's sexual orientation in the case of what Michael might define as not the norm or maybe not healthy is the result of trauma. And now I'll backtrack to what you're saying about the worksheets you've done. Whenever I've wanted the attention and affection or wanted a relationship with someone in a certain kind of urgent way, the worksheets helped me realize that probably this person, for me, has some matching bags of garbage, and I want this relationship to be successful so that I can correct something that wasn't ideal in my relationship with my mother. And the worksheets have allowed me just to step one inch back. As you were saying, it takes some of the urgency out of it or the intensity out of it to have a look at why I care about this so much. And I learn several things. What I feel, usually it's the appeal of the other person has to do with goals I had for my relationship with my mother. This person has characteristics. Some of them aren't even obvious at all, but I come to find out that the person has characteristics that my mother had, which made them, invariably made them unattainable in some way, complicated in some way, personality-wise. A person who had a level of personal pain that might not even be manifesting particularly, but that I sensed, and my urgent wish to heal that person or comfort or fix that person becomes an element in creating the intensity. It's been really fun to look at, because as soon as I do a worksheet on that, I end up in the same place as this is a rerun of an old film. The person who is in front of me may or may not be who I am creating them to be for my own purposes. And I choose a person who will not choose to be with me in the sickest, most unhealthy scenarios. It's a person who will show me once again the unsatisfying and painful elements in my relationship with my mother. Once that has been put out there, there is a kind of dissolving or dissipating of the intensity so I can have a better look at the person and decide whether, in fact, this is a candidate for a friendship. It puts me into my healthy mind so that I can make some decisions. And I just love that you're talking about this, because this has been an ongoing healing, and there's been a lot of healing in this area. But I do think, in my case, the fact that my mother and I are the same gender, the intensity of relationships made me wonder if I was gay. And if I were, my choice of gay relationships wouldn't be very healthy because they were based on trying to fix something. And so I am in awe and deep appreciation of gay people or whatever they are to find partners within their realm of attraction that are healthy. And I admire them because they've found a way of having a healthy, in my case, same-sex relationship. I think that's one of the reasons I admire them so much is you did it. You found the love of your life, and it wasn't an unhealthy relationship. And I don't even know where I'm going with this, except what you've been saying has just triggered so many thoughts about all this. So I'll stop there and see if there's anything you'd like to respond to.
Well, I think what you're saying resonates for me simply in terms of the healthy relationship connection, and it's completely separate from the sexuality. So,
yeah,
you know, it, you know, what you're talking about when in this last part where you said that you feel gratitude or joy for them because they've found healthy relationship connection, and that's wonderful because that's what you've been craving, is this healthy relationship connection.
Mm.
And what you've discovered at some level is that a lot of the not-so-healthy relationship connection that you've been pursuing was rooted in the unsatisfactory or the lack of goals getting met in your relationships with your mom. And so that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's that takes us right back to the root of this work, which is, okay, I have this goal, and the goal I'm holding that's not getting met is in some way getting my mind to load up a whole bunch of things that are not productive and blocking me from seeing how to achieve my goals lovingly, respectfully, gently. So when I cancel those goals and I do the excavating of the traumas and the false beliefs and the stuck points within me, then I see them more clearly. And once I see them more clearly, they lose their ability to drive my behavior today. And I get access
right.
to a whole new set of potential responses.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully one of them will lead sooner rather than later to that healthy relationship and connection and gratification that I'm hopeful for.
Mm-hmm. You said a really interesting thing about how there, for you, there's a separation between the relationship intensity and sexuality, so it may or may not be connected. With me, I think I've confused intensity of feeling with sexual feelings. So that's still something I would like to explore. For instance, I've often said to myself, if I ever have a new friend, I have some friends from the past, and somehow we found our way to being healthy, happy, good, loyal friends. But I often have wished, I want an absolutely best friend here in Allentown where I live. And I haven't found that person to go into that slot. And I think one reason it hasn't gone into that slot is because I associate caring for a friend that much with a kind of sexual or psychosexual, there's a confusion there. I think there has to have some element of attraction so that I would want to hold them or kiss them or comfort them, which goes back to the unhealthy wish for a good relationship with my mother, which wasn't motivated by sexuality at all. So I got off a track somewhere in there. And I don't even expect you to understand what I'm saying, but it's just a something that isn't fitting right for me. I don't know, in other words, if I could have a really close female friend without feeling some sort of physical attraction to her, maybe not sexual, but just a physical attraction as part of it.
Well, are you leaving that as a question for me to answer? Do you wonder if you could have a really close friend without any physical attraction?
Yeah, well, I don't even know if I want one either. I just think
I would offer that it isn't necessary. It isn't even recommended. That's like trying to create your life in a very limited way based on some, you know, arbitrary rules. And so, you know, I just got the image of myself with my very limited artistic ability and a great big pad of paper and an endless number of pencils, but they're all just regular carbon pencils, and I'm just drawing out the stick drawings.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of life is nothing compared to those stick drawings. So if I say to myself, you know, what I really want is this, this, and this. I want a friendship where we feel really close, but I've got no sexual attraction, and I don't even think they're attractive physically, but I have this and I have that. And then other people, what am I doing? I'm using that conscious, logical, 9-bit mind to try to approximate something that, you know, is hundreds of trillions of data points constantly being processed and flowing. And I have that 9-bit mind. The actuality of life is so much bigger, juicier, fuller than any thoughts or words I would have about it. So, you know, my thing is just keep using the tools and quit trying to say, I want a relationship that is this, 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 and this, because the truth of you as a person goes beyond any of those labels. The truth of the other person goes beyond any of those labels. And the potential for the energy exchange that we call relationship going beyond all of that, each new heartbeat, is guaranteed. It's a guaranteed thing. The truth of your life and your friendships and your relationships is going to be so much more than anything you map out when you start saying, well, I would like a relationship that does this, 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 and this. So the more you get rid of the negative emotional states that block you from being in joy and aliveness and connection with somebody, just because you're just using the tools, not because you're planning it out, the more you open yourself to an experience of relationship that goes way beyond anything you could have imagined, each new heartbeat. So I hope that was somewhat useful, because we're out of time, and it's time to get ready to hand the show over to Michael and Jeannie. And always, I thank you for chiming here in the last 15 or 20 minutes, and I look forward to the next time we connect. Blessings.
Thanks, Dr. Jim. Thanks.
And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
Have a great show.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, April the 7th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. While we give Michael just a moment to get dialed in, I'll, as usual, direct you to our website, whyagain.org, and click on the bullseye or the Start Here button. They both take you to the same place. I invite you to listen to the MP3s of the special radio shows we've pulled out, where we actually walk someone through doing a worksheet or their process is around the work in some way that brings in a strong point. All of the radio shows are great, and so it makes it challenging to pick out just a few, but every now and then we hit one and it's like, oh, this is a special show. And so I invite you to go and re-listen and put the tools to work in your life. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted, honored that you're here, and just loving the opportunity to have this conversation. And each time I find that when I have this conversation, I get to reinforce my understanding of how this process of healing works, and I get to enhance my comprehension of where the process goes next. Jeannie's been sharing what opened for her several days ago, and we had an interesting morning of processing this morning as there were some dreams moving through, and just, you know, another way to express about the process of the healing crisis became clear to me as we were processing, and that is that once you do a piece of work that opens up a file in your mind, so to speak. So the mind organizes things, and everything that's connected to any given event is linked into a file on that event, and every aspect of an event is linked to different aspects of that experience. And so, if you don't mind me sharing, Jeannie, a little bit about what opened this morning, or maybe you'd like to share it, and I can throw in my insight. Are you mute, John, Sonny? Are you there?
I am.
Well, we were. Oh, okay.
Yes. Go ahead and share. That's fine.
All right. So the piece that came clear to me was that, you know, one of the things Jeannie processed through in that opening that she had the other day that was about getting out of using willpower and using the spiritual faculty of will instead was the situation of being not really trusted and therefore controlled by her power person. And that kind of, you know, tended to move throughout her life. And some of the early dream states this morning, I kind of act as each other's monitor when stuff's moving, and we'll awaken each other in the middle of a process that's happening and just be there for support. And so what she, as she had processed through this thing of not having to force her way through things with will, but rather opening what to her was the third, if you've been listening to the show for a while on this topic, the third measure, was to be more with the gentle faculty of will. But the dream, you know, and I realized that as a result of opening that file on being controlled, and then in order to compensate, you know, to be good enough, to be acceptable, Jeannie would take care of everything. You know, she's owned it and referred to it as OCD, and I sometimes refer to it as OCB, an obsessive compulsive blessing, because she tends to, with it, get a lot done. Although sometimes I need to say, Jeannie, stop. You're going to go get in the bath. Stop. But anyway, so what just became clear to me is that she had opened that file. She had to process through everything in that file. And so one of the dreams that she had, she was on an airplane. When she was young, she'd wanted to be a stewardess. So she's the stewardess. And there are all these people on the plane, and they're all people from all different times in her life, people she's known through her whole life. And she's going through the plane, making sure they're all safe and taking care of them, you know, like taking responsibility for everybody, which was kind of, you know, at least my assessment. And if you have any thoughts, Jeannie, maybe you want to share them too, if this is accurate or off base at all, was just, you know, in order to prove I'm good enough because mom didn't trust me. I do everything right and I get everything done and I take care of everybody and everything. And, you know, it's just too much of a load for one person to carry. Slow down a little bit and take care of yourself. But what became clear to me was just that as she had opened that a couple of days ago, she's been doing a lot of processing. And then this was another big piece of that process. And I put that out so that you have the recognition that when you do a piece of work, when you open a major file in your mind, there oftentimes is the ripple effect. You know, we call it the healing crisis, that you're going to get to process through all of the untoward energies connected to a particular circumstance or situation that you open and uncover. So it's not always just as simple as ABC. There's a process to be done. There's a work to be done. And the work isn't something that, you know, that happens in minutes. It takes a whole infrastructure to support people doing the work. And that's what this show is about. That's what this body work is about. We're working to hand an infrastructure. And there's a big conversation about infrastructure going on in the culture right now. There have been lots of promises made about it, not much done, and it looks like something's finally going to get done. And, you know, without infrastructure, there can't be prosperity. There can't be accomplishment. You know, things break down. You know, all kinds of crazy things happen. So what we're looking to do with this work is to continuously develop a more powerful, more solid infrastructure. And then through our intensives, through our videos, through our workshops, through this show, hand that infrastructure to people on the deepest level possible and help them to install it in their lives, to make it part of their lives so that, you know, something happens. Oh, I have a bridge. I have infrastructure. I have a bridge to cross here. Oh, I'm in a healing crisis. It's okay. I can, instead of running off like my power person would have forced me to do, and that was go perform, I can stop. I can take a breath. I can lay down. I can take care of myself and nurture myself as I process through this old trauma. And so there was just another little refinement for me in that process you were in this morning, Janie. So thank you. And do you have anything to share from that?
I was trying to take notes there as you were talking, and there was a thought that flittered by, and I didn't grab it.
one of those.
I'm sure it'll come back, but no, just, you know, it was real strange that there were all these people and that have actually been in my life, you know, growing up and at church and everything else, and me just still trying to take care of everybody.
Well, we're here to support you putting yourself on the list and making sure that, like the instructions you would have given on an airplane, if you were a real stewardess in the sky, you'd be saying, and make sure you put your own mask on before you put on somebody else's, that you really do truly take care of you. It's our support for you. And we
thank
appreciate
you.
One, who you be, and two, everything that you do as well. You're an awesome lady, and we appreciate you a lot.
Thank you. And thank you for being my support and waking me up when my unconscious. And I think sometimes, you know, you had mentioned at breakfast this morning about journaling the dreams, especially during this heavy processing time. And I made the statement, I said, well, at least I dealt with all these people all at one time because they were all on the same plane.
You didn't have to go through each one of them one by one.
Yeah.
Mask cleaning up.
So mask, kind of mask canceling.
Yep. Sweet. Cool. All right, well, let's take a look at our reading for today from Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We're on chapter 9 and page 52. If you do not have a copy of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I'm sad to say it's out of print at this point, although because way back almost a quarter of a century ago now when we published it, we spread over a period of a few years several tens of thousands of copies around the country and around the globe. So there are usually some relatively inexpensive copies of it available on Amazon or on eBay. And so it's usually available and or You are always welcome to go to our website, whyagain.org, and download the book free. And so you can read it in digital format on your phone or on your computer, or you can print it off on your printer, however you want to do that. But we're in the topic and the chapter on blockage of truth on page 52, down toward the bottom of the page. And we've just been clarifying with the character. If you're not familiar with the book, it's a conversation with this character named Richard, who's this recalcitrant kind of guy who doesn't want to hear anything that I'm talking about, but somebody told him, you know, he's on his third divorce, he's getting out of town, and on his way out west, he comes near Heartland. So somebody says, why don't you go by and just have a talk with Michael Rice? So here we are having our talk. That's the book. And so we've been talking to him about how blockage of truth happens when we blame somebody else for the constructs of the pain in our own minds. And that when we undo blockage of truth by standing in the willingness to honor truth and really hear the truth and be with the truth, then we get to change everything. So I had just said to Richard, the more often you forgive in the false sense of, you know, letting others off the hook, then the more likely your mind is to think that somebody else is the problem in your life. And when you do that, there'll be a tendency to create more separation. Of course, Richard is just running away from another marriage, his third one, and thinking that the solution lies in just getting out of town. You know, he knows that these women are the problem in his life, and if he can just get rid of them, then he'll be all set. Separation idea. So he's not too happy with me at this moment, and that does happen on occasion. And so Richard was agitated at being challenged one more time with the idea that he caused his own pain, and proceeded to read me the riot act. Actually, Jeannie and I, we had a beautiful day here yesterday. It was 77 degrees. And we haven't, you know, been out for dinner in weeks. We did do a family dinner, but we had a private dining room where we went on Easter. But other than that, we've been, you know, in the fall, we would go out to restaurants that had outdoor seating, but we've just been kind of staying home. Dad's 88, and we want to keep him healthy and around for a long time yet. So, but yesterday was beautiful, and there's one of our favorite restaurants in town has an open dining room that they just open, actually literally open garage doors to kind of make it outdoor seating. So we went out to dine yesterday. And as we were sitting having dinner, I pulled out my phone, and when we got out of the car, there was a car parked right beside us, and there was a cute little poster from Margaritaville. If you remember that Jimmy Buffett song, Wasted Away Again in Margaritaville. And one of the lines in the song is, some people claim there's a woman to blame. And so I took a picture of this little bumper sticker, and I edited on my phone, and I scratched out the W-O, and some people claim there's a man to blame, and I posted on my Facebook page and said, well, you know, what can you do? So here's Richard feeling like he's blamed again. So he says to me, well, that's the way it is. Other people have always been the cause of almost every problem. If only they would listen and think logically, he shrieked, as he momentarily forgot how the dynamics of projection and externalization had worked. I suppose thinking logically means thinking like you do, I volleyed with Richard. That reminds me of the old definition of a genius, someone who agrees with me. Thinking someone else is to blame is a good defense, Richard. But remember, you're the only one who's been there every time, and you're the common link in every event. I went on to refresh Richard's memory. Something we all need from time to time, and I offered to him, whether or not we're aware of it, whether or not we choose responsibility, we're involved in setting up everything that happens to us. This work is based on responsibility. It is your hostility that needs healing. You just torture yourself and make healing impossible by holding on to blame. Richard softens up a little bit and says, okay, I've been there every time. I know this is something I need to work through, and I will. Do you have any coffee? I'd like a cigarette, too. Richard was holding his breath. So here we go. When confronted with the truth and we're in blockage of truth, what do people do? They turn to their drugs. So here's Richard looking, you know, he's holding his breath. Number one thing, number one indicator that you're hiding something from yourself is that you're locking down your breath. And then, of course, what does he want? He wants caffeine. You know, it's interesting. There's a if you just go onto YouTube and do a search, you'll find, you know, put in, I think it was ABC, put in the ABC TV, coffee, and blood flow. And there's an interesting video that I believe it was a reporter from ABC that they had set up an interview. They went to a doctor's office, and she gets an MRI done, measuring blood flow to her brain. So she's got an MRI of her brain. And then she has a cup of coffee, and they do another MRI. And the physician points out that, take a look. Here's how you tell how much blood is flowing in your brain. And he shows that there, with one cup of coffee, there's a 40% reduction in blood flow to the brain. Now, I don't care how you cut it. That's a pretty heavy-duty drug, although it's the most common one in the culture. Everybody goes, oh, coffee, that's nothing. Coffee is seriously something. But anyway, that's not the topic. Cigarettes, same thing. Nicotine, just, and of course, you know, along with the nicotine, and most cigarettes today, I believe there's something in the range of around 500 different chemicals just to make that leaf burn just right, just to get as much of the addictive substance into the lungs as possible and get people hooked. So we're going to enter into that conversation with Richard about addiction, and at the point where he's able to explode, you know, he's going to tell his story, his reality, which is that somebody else is to blame. And then I confront his reality with the truth. And here we're moving from block the truth to truth. It's like, Richard, you've been there every time. This is about you. And his mind doesn't want to see the truth, so what does he automatically do? He looks around for drugs. There's a really awesome video, and I've bought a couple of copies of it so that I've got extras, that was done by a couple of young people that worked at a restaurant out in California. The restaurant is called
Cafe Gratitude.
Cafe Gratitude. One of the first things you do when you go into Cafe Gratitude is they ask you what you're grateful for. It's kind of part of their thing. And so this young kid, who's the son of the owner of the restaurant, greets this 60-ish, 100-pound overweight, New Jersey, tough old school kind of Italian guy. And the guy actually breaks down as he answers, you know, what are you grateful for? What, or what do you want? I think the question that day was actually, what is it you want? And he's like, I would just love for somebody to love me again. And I know with this grossly overweight body, that's never going to happen. And this kid just, you know, kind of empathetically taps in with him, goes back to his father and asks for permission to work with him. So he takes him on and coaches him on changing his diet and dealing with the emotional issues in his life. Well, it's, the whole film is very powerful. It really gives you a chance to look at the healing process and what a healing crisis really looks like. It's a pretty profound video. It's called May I Be Frank. Is that the correct title, Jeannie, do you recall? I know I sometimes
that is
turn
correct,
the title
and
around.
I put the link in the
it's
notes.
May,
it is correct.
Yeah.
May I be frank?
May I be frank? And so, this kid works with this young man or this older guy, actually two of them, and they decide they're going to make a documentary out of it. First time they've done that, and they did a pretty good job of it. But there's one scene, you know, he's been estranged from the love of his life, who was a, you know, teenage sweetheart. They were married, had a child. He's estranged from his daughter. But the one particular event that they show is, you know, he's in his apartment in California, and she's in, you know, she lives in New Jersey still. And so they bring her out to do some processing with him. And, you know, earlier in the documentary, they show these two kids going over to his apartment, and they go through everything that's covered. You know, they're going to coach him on eating, thinking, and healing. And they go through, and they literally, I mean, they show them going through and dumping hundreds of pounds of sugar and junk and meat and, you know, dead vegetables. And, you know, I mean, they just clean all of the drugs out of his refrigerator and his cupboards. So he's sitting doing this process with his former wife. And, of course, she doesn't exactly align with or fulfill all the goals that he has for her. So at one point, he uses one of his early life drugs, one that's been with him all of his life. And right there on the spot, he steps into this drug called rage. And he just flies into a rage at her. And it's interesting because you've heard me say before that when rage, which is one of the granddaddies of all of the drugs, when rage isn't enough to anesthetize the deep unresolved pain, we'll tend to go to something stronger. So literally he screams at his wife as he's getting up off of the couch, and he walks into the kitchen where he keeps his stash of drugs in the refrigerator and in the cupboard, or he used to. And he goes to the refrigerator, open it in order to fill his gut, to fill his belly with his drug. He anesthetizes himself with food. But it's quite hilarious because he, you know, I mean, again, he screams at her. He gets up off the couch. He walks into the kitchen, opens the refrigerator like he's going to find a drug in there. And he just has to close the refrigerator again because there's only food in his refrigerator. Kind of interesting. And when you start observing yourself, when you want to use an anesthetic, and you choose to stay connected to love and breathe instead, a whole different thing happens. And that's what we're here to help people to understand, is how that process occurs. So that's about all I have on my mind for today, at least at this point. And it's about 21 minutes, 22 minutes after, so we've got a good almost 40 minutes left. So if you are out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind?
I thought of what it was that kind of flew by me.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You were talking about having to face and deal with all the links that were connected to the file folder. And
right.
What some people may not realize, and I don't think you mentioned it, because then we start talking about dreams, is that when you're asleep, the veil is open to the unconscious more so than when you're awake. Maybe talk about that just a little bit. And that's why it was easier for some things to just pop up.
Absolutely, yes. And just the fact that you had stepped in, you've stepped into a whole new level of willingness to go for the healing and to access things, you know, that willingness opens the veil on a whole other level. And of course, in sleep, that's why oftentimes dreams will, if we really spend time with them and study them, will be a reflection of what's going on in the unconscious, what we've hidden from ourselves. Actually, there's going to be a new section the next time we do the Laws of Living Intensive. And we used to have a small section in it on dreams, but we've expanded that. We're going to do a significant piece of work with dreams in the next Laws of Living Intensive when we do that. But this barrier, you know, in our normal waking day, for the person who's holding their breath all the time, sugar, junk food, alcohol, white bread, white flour, white sugar, you know, caffeine, nicotine, and all of those sorts of things, that person has really created this thick, impenetrable barrier. In the ancient teachings, it was called the veil. You remember they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. What does that mean? That means that the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious must be opened. And for most people in their normal waking state, they live above that barrier. They don't touch anything under the surface. If they're enraged, they're enraged because of what somebody else did. They're not enraged because there's rage in them. If they're in fear, they're in fear because of something outside of them. It's got nothing to do with what's going on inside themselves. So at night, what happens is this barrier kind of tends to open somewhat, and more information becomes available from that unconscious mind. Although, because of the different forms of denial and the belief systems that operate that are totally and completely against what's going on in the unconscious, the tendency is for those things to come out in some distorted way or some symbolic way. And so that's something we'll be covering in our next Laws of Living Intensive. It's a fairly extensive dream analysis process. And and if Carrie happens to be listening, Carrie, we appreciate the fact that you worked with me and we put that new piece of the puzzle together for the intensive. So thank you. So that barrier tends to be a little more open and makes things a little more accessible, and it can be really profitable to study your dreams, to really look at and allow yourself to be in touch with what's going on at that unconscious level. And as it becomes safe enough to access unconscious dynamics, and that's really what a lot of this whole body of work is about, this whole infrastructure is about how to access the hidden parts of your own mind. And, you know, a very common comment that we'll hear from people is, geez, I didn't even know that was in me. I didn't know I ever thought that way. Well, I didn't know that feeling was hiding in me. They're the kinds of comments that we get. So as you start to open the unconscious, you begin to function more with more of your faculties in hand. And therefore, you tend to create your life out of a more conscious place rather than just playing out the old unconscious dynamics as so many people do. So part of this whole process of healing is literally, quite literally, making the unconscious conscious. And if we refuse to make the unconscious conscious, then there will come a point, because the thrust of the mind is always to bring forward what's in hiding. And if we keep the barrier tight, we keep it locked, then those things will tend to come forward in aberrant ways that lead to crazy behavior, motivated by unresolved unconscious conflicts. So when you choose to bring those unconscious conflicts to the surface, you choose to open the veil of your own temple, life just becomes a whole lot easier and a whole lot more peaceful, because you're not repeating the unresolved patterns of pain from the past. You know, you'll remember Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he says, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. And that word heart doesn't refer to the physical organ in your chest. That word heart refers to the unconscious. He's saying, take care, look into, deal with what's in your unconscious mind. And, you know, if we talk to psychologists today, the average psychologist will tell us that probably somewhere between 90 and 95% of the content that moves in us on a daily basis is unconscious. Well, if 90 to 95% of your life is unconscious, that means 90 to 95% of your creative process is unconscious. And a signal that somebody's creative process is unconscious is that you'll oftentimes hear people who create unconsciously going, you know, I just don't know why this happened. I don't have any idea where this came from. Why is this happening to me again? Because we're hiding from ourselves. And, of course, this chapter we've been reading in the book is about blocks of truth. The previous chapter was about denial, dissociation, projection, externalization, trying to pretend that the cause of our pain is outside of us. And so we're looking to reverse that understanding and to realize that I'm not going to feel anything that isn't inside of me. I can't. It's not possible. And if I'm feeling it because it's inside of me, if I don't know what it's about or what's going on or have the tools to resolve it, then I'm going to tend to be stuck in, you know, the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? What we're looking to do with these tools is to open a space for people to be able to resolve, to take care of their unconscious and remove those issues from their lives. So that's where we want to go with these tools, and we hope that we can be of service to you. We've got about a half an hour left, so if you're out there in listener land, our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that will put a hand up in the control panel. Jeannie will turn on your microphone and introduce you by your area code, and we'll be having a conversation. So if you're out there in this land, how can we support you? What's happening in your life? What's happening with your comprehension of the tools? Can we help to improve your comprehension and use of the tools and the integration of this whole infrastructure of forgiveness, first century Aramaic forgiveness, into your life? How can we support you? Now, don't everybody raise your hand at once, but I bet that with what's been said so far, that just about every person that's listening, if we were in a one-on-one space, if I happened to be in your hometown and just finished presenting what I've presented, what Jeannie and I have talked about in the last half hour, as I walk down off the stage in your local library or your local pub or your local university or jail, whatever facility I was speaking in, I had the conversation I've had so far and walked down off the stage, what would you be coming over and asking me? We'd probably start out with, well, Michael, I just have this one quick question. So the purpose of this show is to answer that one quick question that you have. If you push 1, we'll be having a conversation. And, you know, if you're shy because, well, I'm going to be on the radio, I don't know how my voice will sound, it might be shaky. Can you make it okay if your voice is shaky? It's like, so what? Your voice is shaky. Well, my question, Michael, you know, I've just started, don't even know what question to ask. Well, whatever question's on your mind is a question to ask. And oftentimes, the most basic question serves people who've been doing the work for years because it takes them back to having to look at some of the basics that maybe have been ignored and bring awareness back into whatever's happening in your life. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? We've got about 28 minutes left. Time for a conversation. All is quiet on the Western Front, Jean.
It is. There's no hand up and no questions in the chat room.
Shall we just be silent until somebody raises their hand? That probably wouldn't work that well. Be a little bit too much dead air space. By the way, I've been listening to people about what might work for an additional class in our intensive. We're going to put a bonus class in because we've recreated in a much deeper format the Power Person worksheet, and it's taking a little more time to go over than we had thought would take. So I'm looking at maybe Saturday morning would be a possible time to do a class. We'll talk about it tonight, but if you're listening, if you're in the intensive, just put your thinking cap on and see what you think. And that way, in particular, Peter, who's in Sweden, can participate because, I mean, he's participating in the intensive, but he isn't staying up till 2 in the morning to do the classes. He's doing them by video. But if you're out there, Peter, put your hand up, say hello, tell us how your process is going. Tell us what's happening. I've been thinking maybe Saturday a lot of people at church on Sunday mornings, and to make it early enough would have to be in the morning. So maybe know, what do you think, Jean? Maybe something like 11 o'clock on Saturday. Just put that out at this point, and then let people think about it. Wednesday night we'll talk about it, or tonight during the intensive.
Yeah, because we're now on week 11. I mean, this second intensive has flown.
Yeah, it really has. For sure. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? I was reading, we've talked about this on the show before, it was a couple of years ago, but there was an article, I believe it was in Newsweek, about a pair of twins that were born, and they're calling it, I think they said they're calling it a rescue hug. Yeah, rescuing hug. And the nurse in the hospital, there were a pair of twins born, they were premature, and one of them was failing pretty badly. They didn't think that the child was going to make it. They were both in incubators. So they took the child that was doing stronger and doing better, expected to survive, and broke hospital policy and put the child into the incubator with the child that was failing. They didn't expect was going to live. And the child that was doing well, of her own volition, raised her arm and put it around her sister. At which point, the second child, whose body temperature was fluctuating, heart rate was unstable and in a danger zone, all of a sudden, heart rate stabilized, body temperature stabilized, and the child began to thrive. And just a reminder of the power of the presence of active love. I was actually back in 1995. I'm just looking at the article now. Briley, B-R-I-E-L-L-E, and Kyrie, K-Y-R-I-E, 1995. The article, I think, was in Newsweek magazine. They meant they were 12 weeks premature, so each weighed 2 pounds. One was not expected to survive. And let's see, it goes on to say, at 3 weeks, one twin went into critical condition. Heart rate was soaring, oxygen level dropping, turning blue. Nurses tried everything and they're going to lose the child. And one nurse, courageously, a woman named Gail Kasparian, decided to put the stronger twin next to her sister. Never been done before in the U.S. To say that the standard of practice was to put the babies in separate incubators to reduce the risk of infection. So they say that the weaker twin snuggled up to the stronger twin. The stronger twin put her arm around her. Everything instantly stabilized. The power of the presence of love and the power of touch, of just, you know, really being there with and for each other. Profound to realize that in some circles in this culture, as we've developed so far out of harmony with truth, it's illegal to touch a child. Like, how bizarre does it have to get before we really start to do a reassessment in our culture and say, what's been going on? What's it all about, Elfie? And my offering is that it's about using in and as the active presence of love. And, of course, Michael, extending touch. Yes, sweetie?
Susan Bingham pressed one again, and I didn't realize that she sent me a text. And then we do have some other hands just popped up. Susan,
oh,
you're
great.
On.
Great. Let's say hello.
All right. Well, I was going to save, if you have other hands, take them. I was going to save this question for tonight. It's about the personal power, the power person worksheet.
Worksheet?
So,
okay. Well, that would probably be good for the the intensive tonight. So if that works, that would be cool.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. All right.
All right.
So let's go with
well, we have two hands up. The first one's area code 314. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hello, Jeannie and Michael. It's Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Hey, Doug. Welcome. Good to hear your voice.
I hope the audience is okay. I'm in the car. If it's not, that's okay. But hopefully
you
can hear me
fine.
All right.
Yep,
okay.
You're loud and clear.
Well, I wanted to comment on your story about Jeannie, how her life, how her motivation coming out of that unconscious need to be okay by making everybody okay and so on. And I was just contemplating, I wanted to talk a little bit about how much our world is probably driven by that. I mean, everyone almost, it seems to me, most folks would be operating out of some level of that unconsciously. Even somebody like Mother Teresa or Elon Musk or, you know, people in government. And I just thought it might be a worthy discussion to talk about that and what the world would be like if we could get past that so that we would be really expressing not from a driven place at all, but from the truth of our being and our real purpose and
right.
an inspired life. So
right.
It just seems like the whole planet would be different to me. And I kind of wonder if you start similar or not on that.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. The planet would certainly be different. And there's an interesting dichotomy here, too, and that is that, yes, many people are driven by that sort of a thing, and yet I think being there for others is a natural attribute of human life. Distinction is if you're driven by it, if it's a compulsive sort of thing rather than something that's motivated and comes from the presence of love, and that would be the difference. And as I work through any form of hostility or fear, then I can move out of anything being compulsive, and I might do all the same behaviors, but the space that I'm living from and therefore the space that I create in my world would be totally different. And then the other part of the dichotomy for me is that, and the same people who often are driven by those things, when there's unresolved pain that starts to surface, they live in the blame game. So there's the other side of, you know, what's going on in our culture and driving our culture so deeply is, you know, we just look out in the political world right now and watch how, you know, it's one person pointing a finger at another after another after another after another, and it's all somebody else's fault. And my take would be that they are all dynamics to be resolved within ourselves. And then I think we'd be more likely to come out as the presence of love and do things to serve humanity because that's what we naturally do, rather than out of compulsion and therefore some sort of aberrant unconscious dynamic which will tend to, you know, in the end, screw things up. When we go in and clean up our minds and remove that compulsivity, that's when we can really truly step out as human beings. And we're going to realize that, you know, as the old saying goes, we are our brothers and sisters keepers. Because the truth is, there's only one of us. We're all connected. But do I come from a place of unresolved pain, fear, rage, guilt, grief? Or do I come from a space of love is, to me, what makes a difference. Does that fit, make sense to you?
Yes. There's two things that I think are really significant there. One, that the blame game is like a sign or an indicator. You know, it's like a clue where is this coming from. And I think that's important. And because, as you said, the behavior might be very similar in either case. And then the other thing that I find profound is you saying that it's our nature to serve one another. It's just the nature of the true being self, to want to serve other people, not being driven to do it, but just by nature, that's what we would do in the clear space. So, I kind of would suggest then from that maybe somebody like Elon Musk is indeed maybe doing his purpose. We would assume he's not being driven to stay up all night at his factory other than his genuine desire to serve.
You know, from what little I know of him, that seems like a pretty strong motivator. I look at Mother Teresa, and it seems to be very much the same.
Very good. All right. So that helps me clarify, because that was, one of the things I was wondering is some of these, a lot of people just do and accomplish great things, and it seems like with so much unconsciousness, I was wondering, how many people are truly living that out of their beingness, so that those are some really great clues about how to discern that. So thank you. That's all I had about that.
Cool. All right, sir. Appreciate you. Hope all is well and safe travels.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Blessings. Bye-bye. Miss Jeannie, you've got another hand up.
Well, it just disappeared just a moment ago, and I do not see that number still on the switchboard. So if you're still out there listening and you were the one that had your hand up, please press 1. We've got 12 minutes, so we've got plenty of time.
So if you're out there in listener land, we would love to hear your sweet voice. It looks like we lost that other caller. So, Ms. Susan, do you want to go ahead with your question about the Power Person worksheet?
Yeah, and then you can mention it again tonight, too.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking about it, and I thought, where in the Power Person worksheet is this? And I'm not sure. It's in there, but it's a question anyway. You talk about our needs, and I'm assuming that you're assuming that we have not only the basic needs of shelter and food and rest and contact of some sort, and I'm not going to try to define that, but I was wondering when does a perceived need become not a need but a goal? And I asked this very personally. A very close family member who is no longer living really used to manipulate her family members and us by saying, I'm not getting my needs met. And her needs were emotional needs and wishes. They were goals for closeness and for certain things to be done by somebody else rather than herself. And it was, so when she says, I'm not getting my needs met, that's a trigger for me. And I look at that, but I thought I'd ask you, what are the needs? What do you perceive of it? I sensed that in whatever worksheet we're talking about, you had quite a long list of needs beyond the basic ones.
Right. Well, for me, your question would probably relate to the threshold of awareness, the difference between a goal and a need. I would proffer that a need would be something that has, and that someone doesn't particularly think of as a goal, would be something that has been a goal in previous times, perhaps in generations, and has just become an unconscious demand of the world, an unconscious need, but at one time was probably more in the arena of being a goal.
Can you give
so I wouldn't see much difference between the two.
Can you give an example?
Can I give one?
Oh, please. Yes, yes, Jeannie, my brain wasn't onto one yet, so please take it over.
And this may not be the same, but and this just happened this morning, Dad walks into the kitchen to eat, and he's on his walker, and he pushes it past his chair, and we pull his chair out for him, and he sits down. We push him up under the table. And there have been a couple of times in the last week that it was like, you know, oh, I need to get to the bathroom quick or something like that. And so I would pull his walker out from around where he had pushed it in and put it in front of him so that he could immediately get up and get his walker and go. Well, I was washing dishes. Michael had gone outside to do the compost, and Dad's just sitting there, and he goes, pull my walker around. I had to breathe for a second. I mean, it was a split second, but it was like, you know, I had pulled it around for him a couple of times this week because he needed to get to the bathroom in a hurry. And then this morning, now it became almost a command, you know, to do it for him, which he can pull his walker around when he stands up. So it was sort of like he needed it at an earlier time, and then this morning all it was a goal. He wanted me to do it. It wasn't that he needed me to do it.
Right.
Is that in that line, Michael?
That's good.
Go ahead, Susan.
My thought is that many of us think of things that we want, we think of them as needs. And if we use the word need, we put an additional pressure on the other person who should be delivering for us. It makes
right.
it sort of like similar to when somebody says, God told me. Well, you can't override God's word, you know. So a need is a scary word to me. It's a word to be reckoned with.
Yeah, it kind of moves into the arena of, you know, you're not meeting my needs, moves into the arena of manipulation, I would think, quite often.
Right. Well, right. And unfortunately, the couple that I'm talking about, the husband didn't realize what his wife was doing, but they were very uncomfortable with each other, a lot of fighting and stuff. But I think he felt totally cowed by her use of the word need, and then he felt inadequate because he either didn't want to meet that need or he couldn't. And it was just amazing to see. They were very close family members, and we saw a lot of this, and we saw it in the family of origin too, a dynamic that kept working out. So anyway, if we run across go ahead.
Yeah, it sounds like it's moving into the arena of manipulation.
Yeah,
and
it clearly
once in a while, as Jeannie had just said and I've observed, you know, her dad's really sweet and really cooperative, but once in a while, it's like kind of the message I get, sweetie, is, you know, well, I don't want to do this for myself, and you're supposed to do it for me.
Right. Yeah, that's how it felt this morning, and I was washing dishes, so my hands were in the water, you know, so I had to dry my hands off, and I could have said, no, you get it, but I didn't. I got his walker for him and pulled it around, but it was like all of a sudden, you know, I had done it a couple of times this week because he really did need the assistance to get going quicker, and then this morning, all of a sudden, it was just like, do it, you know, it's like, what?
That is a shock.
And it came from a place of command rather than request.
Yeah. Right.
I did notice my mother's dad was like that. He was a very sweet man, a very funny man, but he would get cantankerous and demanding. And my mother would roll her eyes and, how dare he, she'd whisper to me, how dare he ask. But I wondered if it was just sort of the aging process, kind of hardening of a certain artery or something. It's really not them. Still hard to take, though, Jeannie. I'm with you.
It gave me a split second to breathe, but I recuperated quickly from it. But it still, you know, was like, what?
I know. Right, I get it. Question number two.
I'm very interested in dreams, partly because I have the weirdest dreams, and often they just float off before I can even sit up and grab a pencil, and I have pencil and paper right there. And what I just love it, Jeannie, that you had dreams that seemed to be so much clearer, coherent, and linking to your present life in a way that you could get.
Yeah, but there's sometimes I have dreams and it's like, whoa, where did that come from, or what is it even trying to say? And, you know, I had one the other night, and I've actually, it's been a while since I've drawn. I used to draw a lot, and I've gone through and looked on Google for some images. There was this man, and I mean, like I told Michael, I said, he's like coming towards me, but it's like shoulder first. It's like, I don't know, it was a weird stance the way he was coming at me. And I said, it sort of looks like he's got a skirt on, he's got a vest on, and some kind of boots that aren't really boots. And finally, I got around to it that it was like Native American. And but I haven't yet gotten, I want to draw him. I did a Google search of Native American warriors and everything else to try to find one that was like dressed like that. And I haven't found it yet, so I guess I'm going to have to get out my charcoal. But it was just, I haven't got the gist yet. You know, he didn't say anything to me. It wasn't like he was threatening. He was just kind of coming towards me. And it's like, you know, what message is this? And I told Michael, I said, the only thing right off the top that I could come up with was that it was an ancestral strength. You know, and it was at the same time that I got the message that of stepping out of willpower and stepping into will. And so I think that he was telling me that I had a strength there that I didn't need to push it with the willpower, that I just needed to let the will be there, you know, but I'm not sure. So, yeah, I have dreams sometimes, too, and it's like, what is that? What does it mean? What's it trying to say? And, you know, just journaling it. But now one of the things that I started doing, and I said, oh, no, I've turned into Michael, is I turn on my phone and I'll just speak the message into, I have like a little notepad thing in my phone, and so I can hit the microphone and just say a line or two or something just to kind of kick it into memory then the next day when I look at it, you know, and it's quicker than trying to write it down. But
that's good. That's
Michael,
good idea.
Do you have anything on that about dreams that you can't interpret or can't figure out what they're trying to tell you?
Yeah, I usually, if I don't have a clue, if I don't really connect with what's coming up in the dream, the best thing I've found is ask Rukka, you know, ask to be shown, and then just pay attention. And sometimes it comes up in the next conversation or the next piece of music that happens to come on the radio, or, you know, any number of things will start to clue you in. And if you don't get it, then ask the next night before sleep for support. Okay, so last night I had this dream and I don't get it. Unconscious, Rukka, how about some more? Give me a little different level of insight.
That's a good idea. I haven't done that. Yeah. I do know that once I was in therapy with a Jungian years ago.
Right.
And they do dream stuff. I was dreaming gangbusters, long, epic dreams.
Right.
I'd remember them and write them down. So I do think there's something to do with the intention to remember dreams, the intention to dream. Yeah.
Called having a goal. Remember the mind? is designed to fulfill our goals. So, absolutely, right on track.
Okay.
And we are down to less than a minute. The show is going to cut us off momentarily. So, young lady, I appreciate you. We'll see you in the class tonight. And everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.